Diversity Music Group. Alex H. Alex H. The Bomb Factory. The Bomb Factory.
Ladies and gentlemen, allow me to properly introduce the most incredible beast from the east, live and live in color, in shape fitted to leather and soft butter. Color up, my dollars up, I'm winning exotic cars to women, women and more women. More sinning, I'm a disease of success, blessed, young and gifted, the bar's been lifting. Started from the bottom, I'm now on top of the world. Look, my, I made it, the new most hated. Underestimated since I haven't been painting. Our stories aren't related, so they don't believe. But who cares? I'ma run a few years before I fade to black. My impact shift back to order to lyrical manslaughter in the first degree. I am he. Young, young, fresh, fresh. Don't sit the day I'm ready, I rest. Popping bottles, blowing clouds of blue. Dream chasing all my life with you. Success, success. Young, young, fresh, fresh.
And we welcome you to the latest edition of the Green and White Show here on this Sunday, January 3rd, wait for it, 2016, Haas. We're in the new year. New year, of course, with the Green and White Show. Joseph Haas there, Amiri Tella here. Haas, my man, how are you?
Let old acquaint. Oh, wait, yeah. Okay. Put the bottles out. It is now 2016. Happy New Year there, buddy. Happy New Year to all Green and White Show fans as well. Man, can't believe it, man. Another year getting ready to get started. I say it's playoff time. Don't tell me it's week 17 of the regular season. There are a lot of games on this schedule which look like they're playing, winning your end games. Sounds like the playoffs to me. I don't know about you, Amiri. We're going to that and a whole lot more. We'll talk about Jets, Pats, and Jets getting into the Buffalo Bills this Sunday. A lot going on in the NFL. Amiri, we'll get into that as well. Those Arizona Cardinals, those Carolina Panthers. A lot going on in Buffalo Bills. Something going on in Cleveland. We'll get into that. A lot going on in Indianapolis as well. We had some big college games. Wow, just a whole lot in sports. So let's get this party started. Let's continue the party. Why am I still talking? Amiri, you ready to talk some Jets football? Or what?
Yes, sir, Haas. And as you just mentioned, a lot going around in the NFL, but the Jets are in the crunch time right now. A lot of those teams you mentioned looking at their offseason opportunities or prepping for the offseason, the Jets are trying to make it and continue this 2016 season. They have the crucial matchup, to state it very obviously, the crucial matchup today at Buffalo. This is it, Haas. This is the Jets season, and I'm interested in seeing how they go, because after, you know, the momentum building, just gradual building of momentum, tipped off by the win against the Patriots last week, this game, I feel like this game could be the perfect opportunity for the Jets to keep that momentum into the postseason, or it could be the perfect opportunity for them to kind of, make it a tight one and leave a little bit of doubt as the game continues. But nevertheless, Haas, this is pretty much it, and this is the Jets season right here in a game. So I guess before we completely dive into the X's and O's with that Buffalo matchup, let's take a look back at what the Jets did against the Patriots, Haas. They came out and they beat them, and I thought that was impressive, because we entering the game, you know, there was a lot of discussion about how the Jets would be able to shut down New England. We talked a little bit about the run game. The Jets, you know, completely stuffed New England's run game. And they didn't really let Tom Brady get into his normal groove offensively. So I thought the New York Jets played extremely well, and they completely deserved to win that game. So moving forward, how does that affect the Jets over the next few weeks? What are your thoughts on that game, Haas?
Well, my prediction from last week, of course, I thought the Jets would win. I thought they'd win comfortably, 6 points as comfortably. Didn't know it was going to take overtime to do it in a game where they looked like they had some control in this football game. They just weren't getting – I just thought that they would score a little bit more. You just can't underestimate a team like the New York Jets, Amiri, that has a great reputation, especially this season, of scoring the football, especially when they get it in the red zone. So we can all sit back and let the New England Patriots kicking off to the Jets in overtime, and Bill Belichick really mistake there in terms of underestimating, really, the New York Jets offense and their ability to march it down the football field. They did. They score the touchdown. they easily deserve to win the football game. And going forward, the New York Jets continuing their streak, I don't see any reason why they can't just go into Buffalo and their playoff position with a win here today. The Jets look like they're firing on all cylinders. Okay, Fitzpatrick to Marshall, Fitzpatrick to Decker, just outstanding offense in terms of how they run it as well with Ivory, and love seeing how they're using the backs out of the backfield. Anunua supplementing for their lack of a tight end presence. It's a nice little mix there. Chan Gailey's really calling a good game, and head coach Todd Bowles is really receiving a lot of accolade for how good this team is doing, and rightfully so. This has been a good Jets team, especially the end of this season, and I don't see them. I don't see why they can't continue this going into the postseason, Amiri.
No doubt about it. I think, when you talk about a game like today against the Buffalo Bills, this is a really opportunity for them to entering the postseason, for them to kind of make a statement before they make that entrance, I guess, to make that grand entrance to let teams know that they're for real. I mean, they have, and the New York Jets have certainly sent a very tangible message at the way that they beat the Patriots last week. And considering that they've won their last five, I think that's more than enough of a statement. But if you can continue that momentum, even after an emotionally high game like that against the Patriots, and you can continue in against the Bills, later today, I think that would be such a crucial showing and such a important showing as you try to make a statement, make a stand in the postseason and your entrance into the postseason. So, I guess, to talk a little bit about this Buffalo Bills game, Haas. Obviously, the storyline is Rex versus his old New York Jets team, but I really don't think that aspect is one that really intrigues me about this game. I'm looking more about how, this Jets team will come out after that emotionally high game against the Patriots. Do you think it'll be a slow start at first? Because that's one of my concerns right now, that the Jets might not get off to that quick of a start, considering all that they went through last matchup.
Right, that's one thing to take in consideration, Amiri. Another thing is the New York Jets really haven't been the best road team this year. I mean, think of all of their losses, majority of them coming on the road. Think of their poor performances, most of them coming on the road, highlighted by things like the Eagles game, the Oakland game. They haven't really started off, a strong in terms of, when they're out on the road. So that's one of the reasons why I would think that the Jets would get off to a slow start. But I also think that, you go out on the road, the one thing you want to make sure you pick your defense. And this New York Jets defense has traveled, no matter how slow of a start the offense has gotten off to, Amiri. The defense has traveled well. So I look for the defense to set the pace here for the New York Jets and kind of kickstart the offense. You get a good special teams play, some kind of flip the field type play by the New York Jets, get the offense on. And then they start getting the ball rolling from there. Like I said, they've got a lot going on there in Buffalo. Mario Williams, I guess all reports that he's going to be cut at the end of the season. You've got unnamed players ripping him for saying that he's already quit. There's a guy who I thought was a leader on this team, not just a season ago. So there's a lot going on there. I mean, is it going to be a win for Rex type game for the Bills, or have they checked out for the season as well? So, right. Buffalo's got a lot going on in their locker room in terms of their organization. The Jets really should all be focused on one thing, that's win this football game and make it into the 2016 playoffs.
No doubt about it. And I also think, one of the question marks that I had entering this game, or still have really, is whether or not this Jets team will, take that, I don't want to say take it easy, but enter the game a little bit complacent after hearing all of the disrupt, like you mentioned, this past week and really throughout this season coming from Buffalo. Like, do you I personally anticipate that this is a Jets team, and this is Todd Bowles, who will be on the Jets about throughout this entire week, really, and I'm sure he has, but throughout this game specifically, about staying on top of things and not letting what you hear about the Buffalo Bills affect how you perform. And I think we've seen that a lot, in the NFL, and we've seen that a lot in sports in general, where you hear, reports of unrest coming out of an organization, and you instantly expect the matchup to go 10 times easier. And, I think for a lot of the players in the Bills, and, you mentioned how some of them might have checked out, I think just a lot of them in general just want to be prideful, I guess, in the last game of their year and try to end it out in the best way possible. So I certainly think that it will be some sort of competition as far as, and some sort of, animosity that the New York Jets will face here. I'm just wondering if they'll be able to you know, come out immediately and set the tempo, because if they do, then you might quench or quench any feelings that the Buffalo Bills might have had about potentially being able to win that game. If you go out there as the New York Jets and you put a couple of quick points on the board and you really take control defensively and offensively in this game early, in the first quarter, the second quarter, I think that really sets you up very well to kind of keep the Buffalo Bills down and keep the foot on the neck of the Buffalo Bills moving forward. Because as you mentioned, they don't have much to play for right now, but if you give them a glimmer of hope early and you let them maybe score, you give them an interception or you turn the football over a couple of times early, then that could give this team a glimmer of hope, and that might allow them to get that one opportunity to, you know, to take advantage and potentially, you know, make this a lot more interesting than the Jets would want it to be at this point.
Green and White Show, Amiri Tulloch there, Joseph Haas here. You can follow us both on Twitter. You can follow your man over there at Amiri Tulloch. You can follow me over here at Haas. Now, whether the Buffalo Bills are motivated by their own personal want to go out there and show an improvement and show that, you know, this is their last game, they're going to go out and fight, or whether it's a win-win for Rex or show that they're better than just Mario Williams, whatever the Buffalo Bills' motivation is, the New York Jets should all be singularly focused on one goal, and that's winning this football game. And to comment on some of what you said, Amiri, I think this team actually kind of, like most football teams do, after a while you kind of take after your leader. You know, you all kind of fall in line and fall in step with him, with Rex being a blustery type guy. You heard a lot from the New York Jets. You heard them. You heard a little bravado. You know, you puff their chest out. This just, you know, you don't hear it as much, just like you don't hear much from the coach. You know, very even keel throughout his, you know, any pressers that he has post game as well. Never too high. You wouldn't know this team is on a 5-game winning streak by the way he answers questions here at week 17 going up against the Buffalo Bills. I mean, we could easily put the other head coach in those shoes, and you can only imagine what you'd be hearing coming into this game if he was right. 5-game win streak. So I'm really seeing the team is taking kind of, you know, they're kind of mirroring their coach in this way. He's very even keeled, very stoic at times, even on the sidelines. So you know, you see the team excited, you see the team exuberant, but you're also not seeing this team getting too high. They know they're riding the 5-game win streak, Amiri, but they also realize that all of that could end today with the loss of the Buffalo Bills. So that's what I believe their singular focus is, no matter how the Buffalo Bills come into this football game.
Right. And I think entering, you know, looking at the comparisons, I guess, between the coaching from what the Jets had last year and years before to what they have now, I would definitely agree that that's one of the bigger, you know, things that have certainly made Todd Bowles' impact here a little bit easier to handle. Because you haven't heard much, and like there isn't much to talk about, and I think that's something that's just different. It's a different feeling, where you don't expect there to be talking points, right? You don't expect the coach to initiate the conversation for the week. You expect the coach to do what he has to do to prepare his players internally, but you don't get that same, you know, that same ultra focus, I guess, on what a coach is saying and what a coach is advising. And I think that's a perfect change if you're a New York Jets fan after witnessing all that we did as, you know, as Rex Ryan kind of made his impact on this team. And I think just understanding the differences in the coaching styles, I think it gets you to appreciate a little bit more what Todd Bowles has done this year, because there just has not been a conversation every single week about and a irrelevant topic, right? Like that is missing, and I think as a Jets community, I guess that's something that hasn't really been felt in quite some time. So I think when you talk about one of the things that Todd Bowles has done extremely well, as you mentioned, from just setting a good example, it's just the fact that there hasn't been much to talk about, and that's completely opposite from what Rex Ryan did. And when you look at what the Buffalo Bills are engulfed in right now, you kind of see Rex has not changed much. And so as a team like the Jets, who went through Rex Ryan for several years, you get to appreciate a little bit what you have now in Todd Bowles, just a tad bit more, Haas.
Dare I say, the quiet before the I had to go there. As the New York Jets get ready to take on the Buffalo Bills, great conversation so far. As we get ready to welcome our first guest into the program here on the Green and White Show, Mary Tillich there, Joseph Haas here, being joined by the amazing Jason Coulier, one of the producers, former producer with ESPN as well. I've heard him on many of the great shows, Coach and Coleman, Darren Mel. Also did work with the Mike Lupica Show, also with College Game Day. Extensive resume. You've heard him out there. You can also follow him on Twitter as well. But today, you can find him here on the Green and White Show. Hey, Jason, man, be on the show.
Hey, thanks for having me on. This is going to be a lot of fun.
Oh, definitely a pleasure. Now, we're definitely talking here, Joseph Haas here, Marie Tillich over there. We're talking a lot of not just Jets, Buffalo Bills, but we're talking a little bit of Jets, Pats. We'll let you get in on the conversation. I know how you feel about the New England Patriots, so we'll get you in on the conversation there. What were your thoughts, New Jets, Patriots, Pats kicking off the ball in overtime, and your thoughts on them if they're going to end up clinching home field advantage?
Well, first, going back to last week's game, I wasn't as upset with them deciding to kick, because the defense had played so well, and you don't think to yourself, oh boy, you know, they're going to go and score a touchdown. And if you think about it, I think more teams, you think about the numbers, with both teams getting at least one possession unless there's a touchdown. I mean, it wasn't a terrible gamble. It was just the defense picked the wrong time to play their worst series of the game. So, you know, the Jets deserved to win that game. They played better throughout, and you know, we'll see how it goes today. I mean, New England today is, I think they'll win. You know, no Ninkovich, no Edelman, no, you know, no Chandler Jones. I mean, those are two starting defensive ends. You know, it'll be tough down there in Miami. I would think Dan Campbell would have Miami fired up.
And so I want to ask you, you know, about that Patriots Jets matchup from last week. When you since you're, I guess, not as critical, I guess, of Bill Belichick's decision, when you heard all of the fan reaction and the fan outpour, were you in the moment, were you one of those people who were kind of just taking, were you shocked, or in the moment did you understand it, or did it take you some time to kind of understand the motive behind his decision? Because I can understand that rational expression if you've been thinking about it, but I think in the moment, for a lot of people, it was just utter confusion initially.
Well, I think the way it all happened, the ref asking, you know, you want to kick, Slater thinking that he can say, yes, we want to kick, and we want to kick that way. I mean, really, Slater just needed to say, we want to kick that way, you know, and that would have cleared up a lot of confusion in the immediate play. I think, you know, I wasn't surprised that Bill did it, because he's done it before.
And, right.
You know, with Bill, you know, sometimes some of the unconventional, he's done a lot of unconventional stuff this year, especially lately, and I don't know if that's because they're a little shorthanded and they're trying to, you know, surprise some teams with some trick stuff, but, hey, show the whole playbook and you know, make people think that you have all these tricks up your sleeve.
So moving forward for the Patriots, obviously the postseason, they're gearing up for that aspect moving forward. What are some of the things you're looking for as the Patriots enter the postseason? They have not, as you mentioned, they're a little banged up at this point. But what are some of the things you think that New England can bring to the table, you know, throughout the postseason? What are some of the aspects of this team that you think any opponent would have to be wary of moving forward, despite the fact that, you know, they haven't had their full guns a-blazing thus far?
Well, the key is, and from what everything I've heard and read and seen, you know, is number 11, Edelman. If he's back, you know, that the offense is totally different. The Patriots are 9-0 with Edelman in the lineup, 3-3 without him so far. And, you know, last week against the Jets, 1-for-10 on third down. Edelman and Amendola in there, I don't think they'll be 1-for-10 on third down. And, I mean, as we know, the key to football is third down. Getting off the field if you're on defense, extending drives, extending plays, getting better field. You know, even if it's just the flip field advantage, you know, that's where the keys lie, you know. And Edelman's such an important part of that, and Amendola. And last week they were without both.
producer extraordinaire Jason Cloutier joining us here on the Green and White Show. We're talking Jets, we're talking Patriots, we're talking the AFC East, we're talking the NFL and the playoff picture, looking like the New England Patriots needing one more win in order to seal the deal and have the entire AFC go through. Well, don't forget there are other teams who, the Denver Broncos slipping and falling pretty much. The Pittsburgh Steelers having themselves a playoff game pretty much today in terms of win and you're in, needing a little help. Jets are in a win and you're in situation. Now, with a win over the New England Patriots this past week, Jay, are Patriots fans feeling pressure from the New York Jets? I know New York Jets fans are feeling that, you know, you're one step closer to having a chance at taking this division. So looking forward next season, is this something where going into next season you're thinking, wow, you know what, those New York Jets are one step away from taking a division title? You know, you guys have won that title.
You know, here's my thoughts on the Jets. I really liked the hiring of Todd Bowles at the beginning of the year. You know, organized, professional. You know, I heard you guys talking about it. You know, one of you guys said that, you know, you haven't heard anything about the team during the week. They do their jobs each day in practice, and it's not on the back page like it was with Rex.
Mm-hmm.
They have some key personnel decisions to make. And to me, the biggest one is, do they want to give Wilkerson a contract extension, knowing that they have Richardson up in a couple years? And the key is, what kind of player is Richardson going to be off the field? You know, he's had some issues in the past. Do you want to put all your eggs in that basket and risk the fact that, you know, there might be some issues? Or, I mean, from what I know, Wilkerson's pretty solid both on and off the field. And, I mean, I think he's a great player. I can't believe this is the first year he's made the Pro Bowl. I mean, every year he seems to just be destroying people and doesn't get as much credit as. But you have some other, I mean, some, you know, Revis is still on a high level, but you have some age in the secondary. I mean, Cromartie's definitely taken a step back. You have a little bit of age of linebackers with Harris, been there a while, and, you know, your offensive line has some age. Ferguson and the center Mangold. You know, Mangold's been banged up this year, and center's a key position for that offense.
Correct. Center definitely a key position for any offense. We even saw that taking a look at the college football game, that if anybody had a chance to catch that one last night for Oregon, going up 31 points to being involved in one of the greatest comebacks in college football history, 31 points down, come back TCU without their starting quarterback and starting wide receiver and win that football game. So, yeah, center is definitely an important position on any football team. And the New York Jets, yeah, aging in a lot of positions, they're going to need to upgrade as well. But they seem to be on the come. I like the fact that it's pleasant watching the New York Jets offense. You give them more of a chance to score than not, which is something that watching this team, I mean, it was more of a three and out show than anything else. Now, those are very few and far between. Joining us on the program here, Jason Cloutier joining us. Now, okay, get a little bit in on some of the news around the NFL. Can you believe that Johnny Football might outlast Coach Pettine in Cleveland? That seems to be the story going around. It looks like Cleveland's looking to part ways with Coach Pettine and Johnny Football. I just can't believe it. If he's still going to be in a Browns uniform and the coach won't be there. Your thoughts on what's going on in Cleveland?
Cleveland. Cleveland's been like this since they moved back to Cleveland. you know, and now the rumors are that Johnny spent his concussion recovery in Vegas. As far as I know, you know, Vegas is the perfect spot to recover from a concussion. You know, what happens there stays there, I guess. Or with a concussion, you just forget it. So.
Yeah, I hear you there. Yeah, exactly. Or with Instagram or Vine, we can just loop it every 10 seconds. So
I mean, the drama with him, he's going to be a perfect cowboy. Right? Jerry Jones licking his chops for when Cleveland releases him. I wouldn't be surprised if both of them are out of there within the next couple months. I mean, Pettine seems to be out of there on Monday, so that's step one. You know, they have some good players. I mean, you know, but it all starts with the quarterback position, and you know they've had like 25 quarterbacks since the new version of the Browns. You know, you can't win anything in this league without a quarterback. You really can't, unless you have one of the best, historically top five defenses of all time, like a couple
yeah.
teams that have won Super Bowls have.
Yeah, there aren't too many teams that go out there and win too many games without having the quarterback position nailed down. We see it week after week in the NFL, and we've seen it week after week in the NFL. I mean, how many starting quarterbacks do we have injured this year alone? I mean, this has been one of those seasons where, wow, really not lasting too long. So, you know, teams like the New England Patriots who have had Tom Brady start each and every game, you know, they're few and far between. But the last time we're joined by Jason Cloutier. Definitely appreciate you joining us on the program. Make sure if people, you give him a follow on Twitter at jclute1. That's K-L-U-T-E-1, the number one. And get a lot of great insights like we get when he joins us on the Green and White. So Jay, enjoy the Sunday games, my man. It's going to be fun. Enjoy the postseason. And hope to have you back on the show. It was a real pleasure.
Well, thank you for having me on. This was a lot of fun. And, you know, like I said, for my Patriots, I just hope we have some health going into the playoffs. And, hey, I think the Jets get it done today, but I think that they're going to make their fans really, really squirm on the edge of their seats getting it done. So, which I'll be with a couple of Jets fans watching the game, and, you know, that's going to be my enjoyment for the game is watching them squirm. So.
All right, well, hopefully that we won't squirm too much. Jay, again, thanks for joining us. Much appreciated, my man.
Thank you very much.
You got it. Jason Cloutier joining us on the program here, Green and White Show. I know Jets fans are wanting to squirm. I know when I don't, you know what? Some people like a competitive game. When my team plays, I kind of subscribe to the Robin Lundberg theory of things. Robin Lundberg, one of my favorite radio personalities here, ESPN New York. He says when his team plays, I want them to win like a zillion to nothing. And that's what I want. I want my team to go out there and win a zillion to nothing. So I know that Jets fans really want to go out there and win 1 zillion to nothing. So Buffalo Bills fans, be prepared to get scored on. Hey, I'm, you know, personally, I'm thinking that the New York Jets with exactly what the – look, they've got an offense. I love watching them play on offense, the short passing game, taking the shots downfield, focusing on a Brandon Marshall, single double team, make sure you get him targets. They're getting him a lot of targets. This is leaving other people open. I like how they're using a new and wide to supplement for the tight end position because they really have nothing coming from there, but they're using him kind of, you know, putting him in the slot, getting him close to the line of scrimmage, and he's a big body out there. So that's a great little niche there that Chan Gayle is using. This Jets team, man. And it looks like it's going to be, in my opinion, it's going to be an easy game. All right. In my opinion, it's going to be an easy game. I have the Jets winning by more than 3 points, more than four, more than 7 points. I think the Jets will win by, you know, maybe a 28-21 score or something like that, or even a 32, you know, if they really put the pedal to the metal and want to really score it up on Rex, get as high as 30-something points. But, you know, I really see the Jets having an easy game here. I don't see the Buffalo Bills putting up much of a challenge with what's going on there in Buffalo as well. And yeah, Rex got a stay of execution, if you call it that. But, you know, this only time will tell with this team. And we'll see how they kind of circle the wagons, as Chris Berman would say, next season. But I just don't see them putting up a fight today, Amiri.
That's fair. I also think, you know, this is a Jets team that, you know, is entering this. They know the consequences. They know the results. They know what their actions, what their win could potentially do moving forward. So I think that more than anything will propel them to – you know, stay consistent throughout this game. So I think that's one of the things that I'm most interested in seeing. Again, how the Jets start. And I think they obviously understand the weight, the magnitude of the game. Todd Bowles has mentioned it on multiple occasions. So it's not like they're entering this, you know, blind or unaware, I guess, of what the game might represent for their postseason chances. Mm-hmm. So I fully expect this team to come out and be on top of things immediately. And that's something that I think you have to anticipate happening based on what we've seen throughout this week, the professionalism that the Jets have showed, the solid professionalism as far as how they're handling this game. They're entering this expecting a victory, but they're understanding that whatever they do will really impact their season in a much more vivid way than they definitely wanted to in the end to get a victory. So I think the fact that they understand and I think everybody, you know, watching this game understands that this really does have an impact on the season. That more than anything, in my opinion, will mm-hmm. propel them to a victory, because they understand the weight, the magnitude of the game, and that removes any potential for a misunderstanding or a slip up midway through. So that's my theory. That's my concept on this game. I think the Jets will also win, Haas. I think it'll also be a very wide margin. I think, you know, we are even talking about, you know, as you mentioned, a couple scores the Jets are up by. So that's my thought, I guess, on the game. I would agree, though, that if you're a Jets fan, the worst situation you want at this moment is for it to be a close game entering the fourth quarter. That's definitely not what you want. And if so, I think the Jets are giving their fans an unnecessary heart attack in that situation. No doubt about it.
Yeah, I'm watching Kim Jones' report from Buffalo as we speak, and Kimberly Jones always does a great job on the radio and reporting for NFL Network, and I'm watching him shovel snow off to the side in Buffalo. Oh, geez, it's going to be one of those games. I'm sure it's cold up there, so we'll see what happens. You know what that means. It's going to be ball security is going to be key. Let's get ourselves a quick Ryan Fitzpatrick timeout and get ourselves going with the rest of the show. And here we go.
Yes, sir, Haas. The listeners out there can go check me out throughout the week at jgsportstalk.com. That's jgsportstalk.com. And at jgsportstalk on Twitter. You can also follow me at Amiri Tulloch as well. AmiriTulloch. Haas?
And hostileinterpretations.com under construction. We'll be back up and running shortly. In the meantime, you know, you can get in touch with me at any time. Just at gmail.com or 24/7 on Twitter at Jersey Haas. And, you know, you can catch me and my man Amiri Tulloch over there every Sunday morning, 8 a.m. Eastern Standard Time here on the Green and White Show. And don't forget, you know, you hear that fat song in the beginning of the show there, Success. That's by our buddy Alex Hurst. Make sure you go to Amazon. Make sure you go to iTunes. Get the album. Yes, the complete album is out. Success is a single, but Better Late Than Never is the album. Make sure you check that out. Now, without any further ado, we're going to get our buddy Reverend Ralph on so we can talk more AFC East action, more NFL. Reverend Ralph, buddy, how you doing, my man? Happy New Year.
Oh, yeah. Happy Football Sunday.
Somebody's ready, man. I can always tell. You can tell he's ready. You can tell he's pumped. He's got all of the latest. It's been an exciting week down there for people who are watching the Buffalo Bills. Hey, New England Patriots and Jets just played. You got the Dolphins who are going to be going through a coaching change. So it's been a very, you know, very news-heavy, very, very exciting AFC East. So without any further ado, let's get into Bills and Jets with you, Ralph. I'm already saying it's going to be a pretty easy game for the Jets. Amiri's already saying it's going to be a pretty easy game for the Jets. So we're going to ask you, what do you think the Buffalo Bills are going to have to go out there and do to make this not an easy game for the Jets?
Well, look, I do think the Jets pull this out somehow. I don't think it's going to be a piece of cake. Something tells me that Buffalo is going to bring its best effort today. And you know, what's working against the Jets, number one, they're going to have to go up against some pretty lousy weather. It's going to be cold. It's going to be about 33 degrees, more or less. And there's going to be a little bit of snow on the ground. Not a lot, I think, to really affect the game, maybe an inch or two. But I think, you know, what might make things a bit uncomfortable for the Jets and maybe for the Buffalo Bills, too, is the wind. It's going to be breezy out there. Mm-hmm. The winds might reach 30 miles per hour. So I think that is going to be a factor. The wind can always be a factor on the passing game, on the kicking game, and so that's, I think, something to watch for. The other thing, of course, is the matchup between Ryan Fitzpatrick and Rex Ryan. Ryan Fitzpatrick is 1-6 versus Rex Ryan-led teams. Now, you might say, hey, Ryan Fitzpatrick, his last five games, the guy's been red hot, 13 touchdowns versus one interception. So But I do think that, you know, Rex Ryan will have something up his sleeve for Ryan Fitzpatrick. But I also do believe that ultimately the Jets have the better team, and I think they're obviously playing much better right now. I think it's I could see this game coming down, you know, to the fourth quarter where the Jets put together one winning drive, maybe winning by a field goal. I think
really? So you see this game being that close? You see this game being that close where it's comes down to a last second drive and a field goal? Wow, you think the Buffalo Bills can really hang in with a team that knows they need to win this game in order to get in?
Something tells me that the Buffalo is going to be a pest today. They're going to make it tough for the Jets. But ultimately, as I said, I think that the Jets are going to prevail because they are the better team. They are playing better. Mm-hmm. Obviously have something to play for, not just bragging rights. So I think ultimately the Jets are going to win this game. I think it's going to be pretty low scoring. I could see the Jets winning by a score of 20-17, 19-17, somewhere in that area.
I don't know. I'm going to toss it to Amiri real quick. But Amiri, I believe more in the elements holding back the New York Jets offense than I do
right.
the Buffalo Bills.
Yeah, I think the elements is certainly an interesting factor in this matchup. But I want to ask you a quick question because I heard in your response you mentioned, you know, Rex Ryan might have something under his sleeve for Ryan Fitzpatrick. Would that be like a defensive ploy or a defensive tactic? Because we know for a fact Rex Ryan can cook those up. What exactly do you think Ryan Fitzpatrick will be facing today?
Well, I think what he's going to be facing is if I'm playing against Ryan Fitzpatrick, and I'm not Rex Ryan, but if I'm playing against Ryan Fitzpatrick, I want to force him to throw deep. The one thing that Ryan Fitzpatrick is not, he's not the greatest deep thrower out there. And especially if he's going up against bad weather where it's going to be kind of breezy out there, you know, it's not conducive to the long passing game. And so that's one thing I would try to focus on. I want to see Ryan Fitzpatrick flutter some balls out there. So I think that's one thing to look for in this particular matchup.
So we're here with Reverend Ralph Mancini talking Jets, and we're talking Bills here. How much do you think the Bills are entering this game with a Rex Ryan, let's win it for him mentality? Or do you think that's just non-existent considering the fragile state that locker room is in right now?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it's split. I think you do have some guys that are playing for Rex Ryan. I do think you have some good soldiers out there, if you will. But I also think there are some players out there that just want to finish out the season and don't really care much about Rex Ryan. In particular, you heard a lot out of Mario Williams over these past few weeks, how he just wasn't down with the program from the beginning. He doesn't like this 3-4 scheme. And, you know, let's face it, you know what? I mean, you have to blame the front office, and you have to kind of blame Rex Ryan for this, too. I don't blame Mario Williams that much because, hey, look, I don't condone the fact that, you know, he's not down with the program and he's not down with the scheme. But you have to know when you're coming to a new team, you have to know who are the players that are going to buy in and who are the players that aren't. When you talk about a guy like Mario Williams, he's a player who's in his 30s. He's been in the league for a long time. He's got a fat bank account. And, you know, you're asking him now all of a sudden to change the way he plays, to drop back into coverage, you know, to have more responsibilities, to make things more complex for him. Okay, you know what? If I'm Mario Williams and I played a certain way and I've been successful playing a certain way, I'm in my 30s and I'm making a ton of money already, I wouldn't want to change either. So you know what? I pinned that on the front office and I pinned that on Rex Ryan.
Yeah, oh, wow. Always fiery with the responses. getting into the Buffalo Bills and the Mario Williams, Rex Ryan situation, Reverend Ralph Mancini joining us here on the program. Okay, I know you don't just take – I know you don't watch the NFL in a bubble. I know you don't just watch the AFC East. So I got to ask you some questions about some of the other teams and some of the other happenings around the NFL. You know, you got the Denver Broncos to have Peyton Manning as their backup quarterback today. You know, their backup quarterback today is going to be Peyton Manning as they stick with Brock Osweiler. Big question here. Do you see the Denver Broncos winning this football game? I mean, they've got to win, basically, just to keep themselves, you know, up in a top playoff position. Right about now, you're looking at a lot of teams fighting for positioning. You got the Kansas City Chiefs, who are on a roll as well. But the Denver Broncos and the San Diego Chargers, you know those AFC West rivals. San Diego's got almost nothing to play for, just a little bit of pride. And maybe the last time they get to represent the city of San Diego. So, looking at the Denver Broncos, what do you think they're going to – do you think you're going to see Peyton Manning get into this game, or do you think you're going to see the Broncos pretty much roll?
Yeah, I don't see how Denver loses this game. I mean, look, anything is possible, as the Steelers have proven last week.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't see how Denver loses this game. They're going up against a bunch of zombies. You know, in the San Diego Chargers, a team that's injury ridden, team that just wants to pack up and go home. They're going to be going to L.A. supposedly next year. So, I mean, really, what do they have to play for? You know, I mean, so if the Denver Broncos lose this game, I mean, shame on them. And as far as Peyton Manning goes, I don't think he gets into this game. I don't think Gary Kubiak really cares about Peyton Manning's feelings. He wants to go into the playoffs on a high, you know, and he's got something to play for in terms of seeding in this game. So Brock Osweiler gets hurt, I don't see Peyton Manning coming into this game. As far as Peyton Manning's future is concerned, you know, I really hope, actually, that this is his last year, but I kind of get the feeling now that he's going to want to give it one more try because he's not going to be happy going out this way. Mm-hmm. I can definitely see him now maybe, you know, giving it one more try and maybe going to a team like the Dolphins or the Cleveland Browns or something. And it's not going to be so much about, you know, winning that second Super Bowl. It's going to be more about, you know, going out his way, and you know, because let's face it, you know, this year has been a total abject disaster for him.
Right. I know in the beginning of the season, I was talking a lot about this seeing Peyton Manning's skills kind of erode and saying that this could be his last and pretty much should be his last season. And you know, because of the way he didn't get a chance to finish it, I agree. He's probably going to want to come back and at least finish, you know, come back and give it one more go. I agree with you there. But you brought up something that's going to allow me to transition to this part of a conversation that we haven't had a chance to talk too much about on the show. But it is the three teams that look like they're all applying for moving. Basically, you got the Rams, you got the Chargers, and you got the Raiders, all looking for new homes. Okay, so it looks like the Chargers might end up in L.A. But one of the things I heard, which would make absolutely no sense, is that I thought I heard the Oakland Raiders could end up in San Diego. The San Diego Chargers and Raiders fans, they don't like each other. So how could the Chargers fans now turn around and root for the Raiders? I don't understand this at all. So I have got to ask your opinion on the NFL moves and who's going where and first.
Look, eventually, you know, the writing's been on the wall for years now, and L.A. is one of the major markets in America, in the world. And so, yeah, I mean, it was going to happen. It was bound to happen where one of those teams is going to go to L.A., but now we got two teams, possibly three teams going to L.A. I don't know if Los Angeles has earned that. I mean, in the past, you know, what we've seen, you know, like, for example, the Rams, they were in L.A. for a long time, and, you know, they really didn't have that fan support. And so now you're talking about multiple teams going to L.A. I don't know if that's warranted or not. As far as, you know, San Diego and Oakland, you know what, that might end up being a good thing. You know, that'll build up a little bit of a passionate rivalry in that city, maybe, you know, between Oakland fans and Charger fans. So
no,
I don't see that so much as a bad thing. I just go ahead.
No, Rev, that's a bad thing. I mean, number one, when Oakland did move down to L.A., Oakland fans would drive down to L.A. to go see the games. I don't know if Oakland fans are going to be able to make it all the way down to San Diego. That's like a 7-8 hour drive. Number two, the Chargers fan base isn't going to turn around and start buying Raiders gear. They're not going to support their home team. Like, imagine going to a Raiders game and there being nobody in the stadium because nobody wants to support the Raiders. The only time there are people there is when the Chargers play the Raiders, and they're all going to be wearing Chargers gear. So,
but wait, let's not forget, the Oakland Raiders did play in L.A. once upon a time. I know it's been a while, but, you know, maybe you still do have, you know, some fans, you know, from the old days that did root for the Raiders in the L.A. area.
Right, but the Raiders aren't bookmarked for L.A. It looks like it's going to be the Rams and the Chargers going to L.A. It doesn't look like the Raiders are going to be involved.
Well,
in LA.
Okay. LA, you know what? But either way, you know what? The Rams played in L.A. at one time. You know, I know it's been a while now, but maybe you still have Rams fans in that area.
I think those are great. The only one I think is a real. I could just imagine if something happened and the New England Patriots had to go find a new place and they said, hey, we're going to stick you in MetLife. Like, that just wouldn't make any sense. And I just don't think that the Raiders need to be stuck in San Diego, a place where they're rivals. Anyway, I just think some of the ideas with the moves.
Yeah, listen, what I do disagree with is the fact that you're bringing multiple teams into that area. I think one team makes a lot of sense, but multiple teams, I'm not down with that, just because in the past, L.A. hasn't been the best football market in terms of fan support.
I agree completely. It makes no sense. They had no support, which is why you had to move the two teams that you had there out, and now you're going to go and stick two teams back in at the same time. Well, we'll see. Definitely good having this conversation, which I wanted to try to get your opinion on that one. The Reverend Ralph Mancini joining us on the program. First hit here in the new year 2016. You know, many, many more. Always appreciate you on the show, my man. Enjoy
football
Sunday.
It was a great
Sunday.
Time. All right, great.
Thanks
guys.
Again.
The Reverend Ralph Mancini, always a pleasure joining us on the program, gives his insights on the AFC East, NFL, and a lot more. I wanted to ask you, Amiri, how do you feel about that with the teams moving and jostling around? Like, I remember when the LA Rams were a thing, and I remember when the LA Raiders were a thing. But when the Cardinals were in St. Louis, so I know all these things are like, I don't know if you I remember the Cardinals being in St. Louis, but yeah, they moved around. NFL teams sometimes move. You get expansion. You get the Carolina Panthers. You get the Jacksonville Jaguars. You get the Houston Texans. You know, you're going to get things changed. So how do you feel about the moves?
I think the only caveat that I have, the main caveat that I have is that, as you mentioned, as Reverend Ralph Mancini mentioned, if there isn't support, then a move does not make sense. And what I don't want the NFL to do is force a situation in Los Angeles where you have teams and fans that don't want to be there. Like, you have fans that don't want to support the team, and you have teams that don't have fans to support them. And the only reason that the NFL seems to be pushing for this move to LA is for monetary gain. And I understand that they're a business, but that shouldn't compromise what you have on the field, and that shouldn't compromise what you have in the stands. So that's my only real concern right now with the way the NFL is kind of handling the situation. And the thing is, they've taken so long to get any conversation about LA started that I would hate to see it, after all this proliferation of time, to see it work terribly, right? So I think if you're the NFL and you want to handle the situation, I think now is the time where you handle it right. Like, you've taken this much time, you've dragged out all you possibly can, any conversation even about a move to LA, I think the least you can do is make sure that it's right. And so if that means you have to take time to ascertain, engage the interest, then do it. But as far as I'm concerned, Haas, I don't know if there's that real interest right now in L.A., and I don't want to have to see the NFL just put a team or a couple of teams there just for money and not have fans and not have a team that, that is going to be supported there. So that's my only, you know, opinion really on what the NFL is operating with right now.
Mm-hmm. Okay, definitely great. You know what? Here's something that this this reminds me of. Okay, this reminds me. You know, you're thinking of a we're talking about a team being moved to a city that it's already lost a football team in the past for not being able to support that team. And this reminds me a lot of the Cleveland Browns moved to Baltimore and changed their name to the Baltimore Ravens, and then there was no football in Cleveland for a few years. This is what this is reminding me of. And at first, you know, what's up with this and these funny uniforms and, you know, no Cleveland Browns and, you know, Baltimore had a team, lost it. Excuse me. So how are they ever going to be able to support, you know, this new team? Did you make the right move? But you know, if you take a look at it now, it was a great move. And then, you know, the Cleveland area looked like they really wanted a football team back, so they got their Cleveland Browns back. So you could see something like that happening where it moves away from an area. The area really, you know, shows its support and really, you know, wants to, you know, we'll get the stadium if that's what it takes to get a football team back in their area. And then you'll see a team, you know, reemerge in that area. So it's not, you know, there's another scenario that people need to kind of think about when they're thinking about these NFL teams moving and leaving.
I totally agree. And the one thing that I really don't like that how the NFL might handle the situation is that they're doing it for money and they're trying to maximize what they can in LA, obviously. And
yeah.
I think if there's a time to make the move, it's now, because the NFL is in its prime and it's really at its, perhaps not even at its pinnacle of American popularity. But as far as I'm concerned, I don't like how the NFL will potentially usurp the interests of fans and of teams in favor of gaining more money. Let's just put it, I think that's my way of putting it.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, but you're just like we're saying. Yeah, I mean, it's a business in the end, and they could actually, with the way things are now, you could stick a team in the middle of, and I don't know why they haven't done this before, but, you know, stick a team way in the middle of the country. Why don't they expand to the middle of the country? Like, the Dakotas, why don't the Dakotas get a team? Because there aren't enough people out there to support a team. That's why, because there's such a sparse population. But if it wasn't for that, the NFL could pretty much stick a team anywhere. So if they have to go and cram two teams in L.A., you know, I kind of shake my head at that. And then also, you know, remove NFL teams from markets that have shown support for the NFL in the past. So, you know, glad we got to get that conversation in, because we hadn't gotten a chance to talk about that. It's almost the end of the season. These teams are playing, you know, some playing their last games in these cities or their last games representing these cities. So definitely wanted to get that in. Hey, somebody who doesn't represent the city anymore, Chip Kelly out in Philadelphia, Amiri. Can you believe that? They canned him before the last game of the season. He's 3-0. Chip Kelly gone as the coach of the Philadelphia Eagles. Anything you want to write on his tombstone before we bid goodbye to Chip Kelly?
I don't know, man. I really don't know what the legacy of Kelly is with his Eagles tenure.
He tried.
I think he'll be remembered. Yeah, I think that's what he'll be remembered for. He came in, instituted his way, worked potentially at times, but for the most part wasn't clicking there. So what my question would be is another team going to look out at Chip Kelly potentially? I think he will get another shot, no doubt about it, since he's proven himself, and it seems like he is still at a point where he can command a team. But I'm just wondering right now if his tactics, if his strategies will convert to the NFL. So perhaps it was a situation with Philly that didn't work, or is it more of a bigger thing about Chip Kelly in general and his success as a coach?
I don't think it's too much bad about his coach. Look, I liked his innovation. I liked the fact that he wanted to push the envelope. I liked what he was trying to do there. I really thought it would work. So, you know, sad to see that it's not there working. But he's got to realize, and we all have to realize this in life, that in some positions, it's not just about being somebody who can do the position, but it's also about being a politician. He just didn't do that part of the job well. He just wasn't enough of a politician. He was too much of a genius and too little of a people person. And he wanted to do things his way and kind of isolated himself from the rest of the team and organization. And then when it finally fell on him, he was the only one left to go. So, you know, as a head coach, and that's what a lot of these coaches who are going up for jobs in the upcoming season have to realize, it's not just about being a coach, it's about being a politician as well. Some would say, hey, the New York Jets have had a guy who was more of a blustery politician than he was a very good head coach in Rex Ryan. And now you have a guy who's pretty good, you know, so far in his first year head coach, and a little less of a politician. Well, things in his own way. He's always been a quiet person. He's not going to change, and he's not going to have to change with his personality. Someone with a Rex Ryan type personality, you know, you are going to have to tone that down a bit. You can't be rah-rah all the time, and that's where the difference is. So in Chip Kelly's next position, it's going to be him, you know, understanding the politics of being a head coach a little bit more. And I wish him some success. I hope he, you know, looks to be a coordinator, you know, just to kind of cut his teeth again in the NFL before he gets another head job. But I liked what I saw from Chip, and, you know, sorry to see him go in Philly, and I'm sure the Philly fans aren't sorry to see him go. You know what I always love? You know what I love, Amiri? You know what I love more than anything else? I love when we get hockey talk. Hockey talk from you. Guess what? Ice time with Amiri. Amiri, man, I don't know what to tell you about the Rangers. I don't know what to tell you about the Devils. Why are we seeing all this losing hockey right now? I mean, is it because people aren't paying attention? I mean, are they mad at us for not paying attention early in the season when they were all on fire?
Yeah, that seems like the support level of the Rangers was at its peak at the beginning of the year, no doubt about it, when they were on that streak or peak of the Rangers' success was at the beginning of the year. Right. Let's see if they can turn it around over the second half. We just had the Winter Classic, though, Haas. I don't know if you got a chance to see any of that. That was an interesting matchup over there in New England. So at Gillette Stadium. So that was a cool and the turnout was usual.
And somehow the Bruins still didn't find a way of showing up. They knew where the place was, but they didn't show up. What happened? They got lost.
Yeah, 5-1 was the final in there. That was a little interesting to see that game. But as far as the Devils and the Rangers and the Metropolitan Division, Haas, things have kind of turned around, as you mentioned, for this Devils team, or you alluded to. They've won their last three games. They're a little bit better as far as the standings are concerned. But as of right now, Haas, there's really a bottleneck there in the Metropolitan Division. The Capitals have continued to kind of run away with this Eastern Conference, really. Best team in the Eastern Conference right now by quite some by a long shot, essentially. 59 points. The nearest team is Florida with 48. But what's interesting about the next three is you have the Islanders, the Rangers, and the Devils. And the Islanders with 47, the Rangers with 46, and the Devils with 45. So as of right now, it's a bottleneck completely between these tri-state teams. And then you have Pittsburgh right below with 42 points. So what I'm interested in seeing, though, as far as this Rangers team is concerned, is what they will do and what they will do to kind of get back on track, because that's one of the crucial aspects of hockey. It's momentum. And it's not necessarily about, you know, whether or not you're able to show up every so often. Hockey is really a momentum-based sport, because what you do so much depends on your feel, how you're feeling and what you're able to produce energy-wise. And if you're not in a state of mind where you're confident, then that's really where the losses can begin to pile up. So this Rangers team, I just don't know if they're confident right now. And it sounds weird because you're a professional team, right? You should have that inherent feeling of victory every time you step on the ice. But I don't know. It just seems like the Rangers haven't been as inspired. They just got shut out by the Florida Panthers in their last matchup yesterday. So it's a team right now in this New York team that needs some sort of spark, needs some sort of inspiration, because they just look like they don't have it. And, you know, this is a bumpy road that I think every NHL team faces. They started off the year well, so they would not have been able to obviously continue that streak. But it's disappointing when you see a team like this kind of just look so, look so lackadaisical on the ice. And that's something that I think moving forward will have to be corrected if they want to try and make any sort of an impact in the postseason this year. I guess to continue, though, as far as the Islanders and the Devils, Haas, those are two teams that keep on your radar moving forward. The Islanders haven't been fantastic this year. They've kind of been right around the middle, even keeled, but they have certainly showed up when they need to. Their defense is very good this season. So the Islanders are always in the conversation. And of course the Devils, another example, I guess, of that even keel team. They've gotten a little bit of an inspiration as of late, won their last three. So let's see how the Eastern Conference plays out. But as far as right now, a cool little bottleneck taking place between the New York teams and of course, the Devils right in that conversation as well.
Another strong shift by Amiri as well. A little ice time with Amiri, always a pleasant segment of the show. I love catching up. And yeah, you know, we're looking for the local teams to do a bit better. Can't wait till we get to the part of the season where we're talking playoffs as well. So a little bit there. But let's get a quick Ryan Fitzpatrick timeout in, second one of the show, and get to the top of the next hour and welcome in our next guest. Amiri, go.
Indeed, the listeners out there can go check me out throughout the week over on Twitter at Amiri Tulloch, AmiriTulloch. You can find me at JG Sports Talk as well. And, of course, JGSportsTalk.com.
Always on Twitter, 24/7, at Jersey Haas. You can get my inbox, JosephHaasNFL@gmail.com. Don't forget, each and every Sunday morning, 8 a.m. time, you got the Green and White Show with your man Amiri Tulloch there, me Joseph Haas here, top of the next hour, 9 o'clock. You know what that means? Bigger Bad Ben Way. We're gonna have him on the program in a moment to talk NFL, to talk all sports and more, even a little college football. But something tells me we're gonna start the conversation with frozen margaritas. So without any further ado, Brian Benway on the program. Make sure you follow him on Twitter at Brian Benway. That is with a Y, not with an I. Brian, how was it last night?
Gentlemen, Happy New Year. And
Happy
by the
New
way,
Year.
it was a disaster last night. It was unbelievable. So you guys know that last time I was on the show 2 weeks ago, I told you a buddy of mine asked me to help serve margaritas at the Alamo Bowl in San Antonio. By the way, we'll get to the game in a second, TCU in Oregon. So I'm thinking, okay, this is going to be great. It's not going to be that hard at all. I'm going to serve margaritas. I'm going to have a great time. I'm going to get some tips. I'm going to see some hot college chicks come up to the margarita stand. No, no. Hey, if your friends ever ask you to help them serve margaritas at any kind of event, do not do it. It was so terrible. It was so busy. There were 64,000 people in the Alamo Dome. It was sold out. It was a great atmosphere, but you have lines and lines and lines of people that are drinking, that are impatient, that want margaritas. Here was my training on how to do it. I got there before the game. They said, okay, here's the blender, here's the ice, here's the booze, go. So that's basically what it was. The line was so long. The line was so long. It was insane. And I was really disappointed. I thought there were going to be a lot of really hot college girls that wanted margaritas. Guys,
right,
I served more overage fat men margaritas last night than I did hot college chicks. And I didn't even get to see any of the game live. And it went to three overtimes. I had to come home and watch the game after I served margaritas. So, but I made a lot of money last night in tips. It was great. I didn't even have to show or lift up my shirt to get any tips. But it was so busy. I'm telling you, it was so busy. I'm never doing it again.
I got the Bedway is definitely our Bill Walton. You don't even have to ask him a question. We're just like, Brian, go. He just goes. I love it. Brian, man, I thought it would be a more pleasant experience going out there and have a lot of fun. You obviously, you haven't made it to too many bowl games if you thought there were going to be any college chicks at a bowl game. Why would college go to a bowl game? They go to the free games. I was a college student. I didn't go to too many bowl games. But after college, yeah, I definitely went to a couple of bowl games. So, yeah, man, it was going to be you serving margaritas pretty much all day. I kind of wish I had one, actually. Oh, that would have been pretty good last night while I was watching the game. I mean, it was – you know what you should have hoped for? And I don't know why this didn't happen for you, man. It was a 31-0 game by halftime. It was actually the perfect scenario for someone like you. 31-0 by halftime. You figure half the stadium would go home at halftime. You'd have a lighter day, then you'd get to watch the second half from the atrium there. But it didn't happen that way.
Well, you know what happened, though, and I'm still baffled by this, is at halftime, you're right, it was 31-0 Oregon, most of the TCU fans needed to get drunk, so they needed to get their alcohol fixed. Now here's what I don't understand. As TCU started to come back, their fans did not go mostly back into the stadium. A lot of them were still hanging in the concourse, watching the game on TV, hanging by the door. So I guess their thought was, well, if Oregon scores again, we're right near the exit. We can leave earlier and beat the traffic. That, I never understood it. You're paying $200 to go to a bowl game. Why are you going to be an idiot and stand in the concourse and watch it on the damn TV when you can go sit in your seat and watch the game?
Agreed. And then finally, as the game started to – it was kind of funny because as the game started to get closer, you're like, wow, where people come from? I know they're not letting them back in the stadium, so now I know that they were all hanging out in the concourse with you, making your life a living hell. I haven't actually gotten a chance to actually ask you a football question, so I'll get started with asking you a football question. How about we start with that game? Unbelievable game. Before that Boykin gets arrested in San Antonio. Some people are heckling him in a bar. He gets into it, and him and a cop, and this and that. And now, so, you know, he's suspended for the game. They're out their top wide receiver. They're down 31-0 to a high-flying Oregon team. You know, you think anything of TCU playing in Texas, coming back, but lo and behold, they have a nice second half comeback, and then of course the overtimes, tremendous overtimes. Love. So, just give me your thoughts on a tremendous game that I know you had to watch the replay.
Yeah, first things first, I'm going to take credit for serving Boykin margaritas in the bar, which I didn't do. That was not me. But going back to the game, like I said, I went home after late last night. And I watched the game in the overtimes. By the way, I love college football overtime. I love how they structure the overtime. I wish they. I like how the NFL has changed theirs, where if you score a touchdown on your first possession, you win. I like that. But I love the college football model for overtime. And you have to, I think, start off with how embarrassing it was for Oregon. You cannot go into a bowl game up 31-0 at halftime and blow the game. You had the game. You were playing very well. You had TCU down. You were doing everything right. Now, some folks will point to the fact that Oregon's quarterback got hurt, but you still had a sizable lead at that time. You have to stick with what you're doing. Make sure you're making plays. Now, we have to give TCU all the credit in the world. The quarterback is out. The wide receiver is out. They were dead in the water. The heart, and that's one of those things that, as a coach for Gary Patterson, you say, wow, my team did not quit. There are a lot of teams at every level, NFL, college, high school, that if you're down 31-0 at the half, you're going to throw in the towel. That's not the case last night. TCU found the gaps in Oregon. They found what worked. They made a lot of adjustments, and they came back and won the game. It was a heck of a game. It was a heck of an atmosphere from what I heard in the concourse slinging the booze last night. But when you watch it on TV, you see two tales. It was a tale of two halves. Oregon should be embarrassed by the loss. You cannot lose a game that way. And for TCU, heck of a comeback, and that's something you build on for next year and say, look at what we did in our last game of the year. So it's really one of those things where a lot of people are happy at the end of the night. A lot of people are not. But it's really two different views you have to look at it from. I'm happy for TCU. I have a lot of friends that went to TCU that are TCU alums, and they were pretty upset early in the game. But they came back, had a heck of a win, and down two big players. That shows a lot of guts and gumption by that TCU team.
Well, I'm just listening and hearing the college expertise go by. I'm trying to pick up on all I can. So I guess my elementary question to both of you, as far as, you know, this is concerned, where does this rank in some of the more historic games we've seen, or some of the more historic college comebacks we've seen, as far as memorability is concerned? Where does this rank as far as great college games is concerned, in your opinion?
Well, okay. You know what?
you know, and Brian, correct me if I'm wrong, but bowl games is it's really like bowl games are glorified exhibition games where, you know, they're for money, for the conferences, and you know, it's really hard to evaluate the teams in a bowl game, for instance. I mean, you know, first of all, each team gets way more practice against opponent than they ever do in a regular season game. So, you know, you get that difference there. There's the difference of, you know, if you have certain players who know they're going on to the level, there's that difference there, them knowing that this is a one. Yeah, there's only so many games, so many bowl games that are the historic bowl games to where, you know, you would kind of, you know, hold on to something like this. Like, you talk about Rose Bowl games. You talk about old Cotton Bowl games, maybe. You know, you talk about the old Gator Bowl games or something like that. You know, you talk about the Sugar. You just say, you know, you wouldn't think of, oh, yeah, by the way. Like, the Alamo Bowl is a game and has a lot of prestige to it. So, yeah, it would be one of those that's talked about. But you wouldn't say, oh, yeah, don't forget the Insight.com Bowl where there was a 45-point comeback. Like, you just – like, if it happened in a game that wasn't the Alamo Bowl, you know, it really wouldn't be up there in terms of, you know, it would happen, it would count as a record, but the prestige of it wouldn't be as much. Brian, do you agree or disagree with me? If it was the Insight.com Bowl or the Poinsettia Bowl, you know, this would just be forgotten.
Or the TaxSlayer.com Bowl. Let's not forget the prestigious TaxSlayer.com Bowl.
Yeah.
First of all, I think you guys know my thoughts on this. When I was on Yahoo Sports, I used to spew venom against how much I hated all of the bowl games. There are so many bowl games that they're letting high school teams play in these things now. There are so many bowl games. And most of them have been crappy.
I mean,
most of the bowl games have been so bad this year. That's another story for another day.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
when you talk about memorability of bowl, and I think I just made that word up, in Texas and in San Antonio, you're going to remember that bowl game. Across the country, if you watched the game last night, it's going to be up there. I'm going to throw out a couple of bowl games that were memorable at the end and see if you guys remember those. Let's go back to the mid-2000s where Texas came back and beat USC in the national championship game. Vince Young scored that last touchdown. USC was all world. They were looking for a three-peat. USC loses and Texas wins that game. Another one that I can remember off the top of my head was when Boise State, the little engine that could, way back in the 2000s as well, they came back and they scored on that hook and ladder play to beat Oklahoma. Do you remember that? Mighty Oklahoma. That's when they were the top dog. No, but
yeah.
And then the guy that scored the touchdown for Boise State proposed to his cheerleader girlfriend right after the touchdown.
Do
you remember that?
Yeah, I remember that. I remember that. Yes, I do. I totally remember that. Oh, wow. Yeah, you're bringing it back.
But to kind of get back to kind of cap off your question, Amiri, it's a heck of a bowl game that we saw last night. Will it be in the all-time top 10? No, because to Haas's point, it was the Valero Alamo Bowl in San Antonio, Texas. But you're going to always look back at that game and say, holy cow, that was a heck of a game. So it was memorable. Is it all-time memorable? Will we look back on it in 20 years and say, yeah, I remember the Valero Alamo Bowl. That was a great comeback. No, but for the moment, it's great that we could talk about it. But those are some of the other bowls that I remember off the top of my head that had some great finishes back in the early 2000s. I forget the exact dates. I want to say the Texas-USC game was 2005, and I want to say that Boise State Oklahoma game was somewhere around that time frame, too.
I'm not going back to the 60s and 70s,
but...
Yeah, the Texas-USC game was at least in the sometime between 2004, 5, 6, was in California for that one. Yeah, so it was, I think it was 06, 05, something like that. Wait, hold on. The quality of being worth remembering, that's memorability. That's the word you didn't think of. It does exist.
You're using my word,
Brian,
yeah.
Benway. Yeah, Brian Benway, say 50 cent, screw that, I got a dollar. I got a dollar word. He comes and joins us on the program each and every day. His insights on not just college football, but much, much more.
Amiri, you know where I got to go next, right? I mean, I didn't even get into the college football playoffs, but I gotta go MMX. I mean, it was a huge championship fight last night. I gotta go MMX.
I heard Amiri sigh, by the way.
Yeah,
I mean,
I went from college football to MMA. I might as well just went from cooking to painting on his, like, you know, on his TV. Robbie Lawler, Edge's Carlos Condit, man. It was a brutal fight. They go all five rounds. 25 minutes of two people punching themselves in the face. Brian, can you believe it? Some say Condit should have won that fight. Lawler looked like an aggressor in it, but Condit looked like he was holding his own. Your thoughts on a fight that most will say is an instant classic?
Yeah, you mentioned 25 minutes of two guys punching each other in the face. That actually sounds like a lot of people's New Year's Eve parties, doesn't it? When you get all the booze racking up against each other. And yes, like we've talked about, I was at the Alamo Bowl last night. But
after
I watched the TCU comeback when I got home, I went and checked out some of the highlights of that fight. By the way, I've interviewed Robbie Lawler and Condit several times in Vegas. I love talking to Robbie Lawler. Condit, not so much. He's not as great of a guy to interview as Lawler is, but if you are a novice, if you're a newcomer to UFC and you wanted to check out a fight, you picked a really good one last night. That really is what it is, the epitome of. It's two guys battling, two guys that can not only give punches hard, but have the ability to take them and to not get knocked out and to continue to fight on. I don't know if Condit won the fight or not. I still think when you have a close fight like that, the edge is always going to go to the champion, Robbie Lawler. By the way, no relation to Jerry the King Lawler from WWE. Just wanted to point that out. That's like the third time in a row that I brought up WWE on the program, by the way. Robbie Lawler, so quick. He's quick, but yet, if you look at Robbie Lawler, and I think you talked about it, didn't you meet him on the street and you didn't even know who it was? Was that Lawler?
Yeah.
So to go back to what you were talking about a couple of weeks ago, if you looked at Robbie Lawler like you did, Haas, back in the day on the street, you'd say, there's no way that Robbie Lawler is a first-class world champion UFC fighter. Now, you would think maybe this guy is in a GQ magazine. You know, maybe he's a model on the side of the street or something. He's a good-looking dude, good-looking cat. But you wouldn't think that he's a badass. He is. He can punch. He can kick. He can choke. I think he won the fight. I do. It's a heck of a fight. So I wish they could get more like that. That went the distance, that had back and forth. The crowd was into it. Vegas was lit up. By the way, I'll be in Vegas this week. I'll be in Vegas Wednesday through Sunday. Had to throw that in there. Vegas was lit up last night for that fight. So it was a good fight. I didn't watch the whole thing. Like I said, watch the highlights. But Robbie Lawler is impressive. And if he can continue that pace, if he can continue to fight at that level, the next fight he has, I would encourage newcomers to UFC to watch him fight because he is worth the price of admission.
Oh, wow. Benway on location in Vegas. Can you believe it, Amiri? You know what that's going to be like. Benway on location. He's loose in Vegas. I mean, I want to see that.
It's going to be like 6 a.m., I think, Vegas time when your show's on next week. I might just be getting in. You never know.
Okay, that might be even worse. All right, before we close the door on this segment, I got to get into the college football playoff, Amiri. I mean, you know, two games, two teams, it happened. Let me be real quick. Yeah. Oklahoma, Clemson, Michigan State, Alabama. One game was pretty challenging in the first half, and the other game was pretty much about Alabama just having more horses than Michigan State, and Clemson proving that they are the number one team with the way they dismantled and just basically picked apart Oklahoma. Your thoughts on the four teams and how they played in the game, Brian?
I first of all have to come out and say my bad on the Michigan State thing, right? I swear to you guys that I thought
so
Michigan State was going to be the dark horse in this tournament. I think Haas kind of agreed too.
Yeah.
But when you look at Michigan State, they were outmatched. They were outmanned. They just got ran through the stadium. Mm-hmm. Alabama looked like $1 million. Michigan State looked like five sets. There was nothing even close to that. Clemson, they showed the muscle. They had a heck of a game plan. They just smacked around Oklahoma. I'm looking forward to Alabama and Clemson. I think Alabama is going to take it. I think Alabama has more weapons. I love the offense. The defense was stout, too, but I think it's a good matchup. I don't think we're going to get a blowout. Now watch it be like 41-6. I think it's going to be a great matchup. I like Alabama in that game, but I was completely surprised by the way Michigan State got taken to the woodshed on Friday night on New Year's Eve. I apologize. I feel really bad that I was so far off on that. But Alabama just came out absolutely dominant, and I think Alabama's going to win on Monday night.
Yeah, I agree with you with them about to win on Monday night as well, and agree with you in terms of just I didn't realize Michigan State could just come out there and absolutely not show up the way they did. Alabama just had better bodies on the football field, and that's actually what's going to end up taking it. I'm going to just pretty much say this. Which team has more NFL bodies on the football field, Alabama or Clemson? And though Clemson may have one or two in some skill positions, everybody in Alabama NFL roster. If they're not drafted, they'll be on a practice squad. They'll be an undrafted free agent. That's what's going to be the big difference. And we'll see about the line of scrimmage in terms of this game. So that's going to be another outstanding game. Can't wait to talk to you about it. Enjoy Vegas. Hope to talk to you next week, Brian. Always a pleasure having you on Bigger Batter Benway. And as always, he never disappoints. Catch you next week, buddy.
Thanks, gentlemen, Happy New Year. Wish me luck on the slot tables next week.
Woo! He's going to win. Brian, take care, buddy. And that was the great Brian Benway on the program. Always interesting storytelling. I didn't think I'd ever get to know that much about a Frozen Margarita. But you never know. Amiri, I know that was all college football and MMA, but they were the talk of the town. I'll give you a chance to get back into the NFL fold. We could talk Dalton and the Bengals. We can actually get into a little NBA. Yeah, I'm here.
Okay.
You there?
Sorry, yeah, your mic cut out a little bit there. But, yeah.
Okay.
Informative always from Brian.
Oh, definitely. Let's get into a little NBA while we have a shot. Okay. Cleanthony Early. Getting shot coming out of his club and out in Queens, and, you know, nothing really good happens at 4 or 5 in the morning, as we all know. And, you know, this, you know, he was targeted. He did everything he was supposed to do. The guy hails a cab from the outside, thinks he's in a cab on his way home, does everything you tell every NBA, every star who's, you know, if you're this, you know, don't try to drive home, get a cab. And that's what he did. And, you know, the cab was pulled over by a couple of cars, and he was shot in the kneecap, relieved of some of his jewelry, and just glad to know that he's okay. And just, you know, guys, try to take it easy when you're on the way out. In terms of the New York Knicks, they're looking okay, you know, in terms of you know, their record, and they're looking a lot better than Brooklyn, to be perfectly honest. Well, the New York Knicks are actually going to give us some sort of, not going to say they're going to make the playoffs. They look like they're going to be a 500, maybe a little less than a 500 team, but the Brooklyn Nets, they're just, at least they got a couple of wins, a couple of good road wins, but what, they've got 4 road wins, and I think they've won 10 games on the season. So, you know, you get a little bit better basketball from the Knicks. But your thoughts on the Knicks?
Yeah, the New York Knicks have had an interesting season. And, you know, as you mentioned, I guess the only positive, as you just said there, is that they have beaten out Brooklyn for the New York crown, if such a thing exists. But at this point in time, yeah, I think the conversation right now for the Knicks is very similar to what it's been over the last few years, really, which is just, you know, mediocrity, essentially. And, you know, there have been times where the Knicks look like they might be something, and there have been times where it looks like the Knicks are just, you know, one of the worst teams in the league. And as of right now, I just think, you know, defensively the team is not clicking. Offensively, it's a very one-dimensional style of basketball. I really don't know what the Knicks are. I don't know what the purpose, the mission of the Knicks is this year, right? Obviously, it's to win games, but I don't know if they have that aspect of the team that is their strong suit. It's definitely not their defense. And for the most part, it hasn't been their offense. So I think the Knicks are stuck a little bit right now in the quicksand. And this is a tough situation to be in because they're they're not bad enough to be one of the worst teams in the league and get a high draft pick, but they're also winning enough games to the point where they're in the conversation of competing, and the season is not over yet, so they're still only about three games out of the eighth seed right now, so they're good enough to be in the conversation, but they're not bad enough to really get a good draft pick next year and maybe try to turn things around like they did last year with that number fifth pick with Porzingis. But I think right now the Knicks are in a position where they're right in the mire right now. They're stuck in the quicksand, Haas, and I don't know what their outlook will be for the rest of the year.
Yeah, how about when the local basketball teams get a little bit better? They'll get a little bit more time on the show before we have to close it out. Let's get into a few of these NFL playoff games that we're going to get this week. We get early playoff games, Amiri. Titans at the Colts, Jacksonville Jaguars at the Texans. Realize Pagano, they're saying he might be out there with the Colts. With the Texans, they need to win in order to secure the division. You've got Pittsburgh playing Cleveland. They need to win and get in. You've got Baltimore and Cincinnati. Baltimore's done it once to Pittsburgh. Can they do it now to the Cincinnati Bengals and put an L on their ledger? All right, you've got Oakland and Kansas City. Kansas City needing to continue to keep the hot streak going. And then also you've got the Denver Broncos and the San Diego Chargers. Don't forget, tonight they're going to close out the season with the Minnesota Vikings at the Green Bay Packers for the division. These are some de facto playoff games we've got today, Amiri. So don't let anybody tell you the playoffs starts next weekend. They start right now.
There you go. We'll see how the Jets fare today. We'll see how a couple of these other teams fare. But Haas, really quickly, I wanted to, if you got a couple minutes here, you want to talk to the Tom Coughlin situation, Haas?
I was actually just gonna let him kind of twist in the wind a little bit more. I was gonna let it go, but I didn't want to hurt your feelings. Yeah, let's go, Tom Coughlin. I didn't want you to feel bad. We had such a great show. I didn't want you to feel bad. How's it going?
Yeah, I think at this point, I think it would be best if the Giants and Coughlin come to mutual terms and mutually one of those how the PR words it mutually agreed resolving of the position. So I want it to be as seamless and smooth as possible. No firing here. Just Tom Coughlin, one of the best coaches, I think, in franchise history that can be said with his couple of Super Bowl rings. It's just unfortunate to kind of see the decline that he's had over the last few years. But, yeah, no doubt about it. I think he'll go down as one of the best Giants coaches. And now the question is, Hall of Fame or not?
Ooh, Tom Coughlin, Hall of Fame. They will, with what he's done in the NFL, He'll probably end up in the Hall of Fame with what he's done, and especially those two Super Bowls. He's got those. No one can ever take those away. Mutual parting of the ways was the phrase that I believe the man JG was looking for. Mutual parting of the ways. That's something we'll do today and come back again together next week. We'll mutually part right now, but we'll get back together 9 to 8 a.m. How does that sound, Amiri? Sound good?
Sounds like a plan.
Yeah, definitely sounds like a plan. Amiri Tilly, Green and White Show, as always, a wonderful day. Hey, everybody, enjoy the playoff games today. Don't let anybody tell you the playoff starts next week. They start this week. Okay, so as usual, it's God bless. Go Jets. Turn us up. I guess I'll turn us up. And take us home.
The best team music group. Alex H.
Yes, sir.
The Bomb Factory.
Ladies and gentlemen, allow me to properly introduce the most incredible beast from the east, live and live in color, in shape, fitted to leather, and soft butter, color up, my dollars up, on winning exotic cars, right. women and more women, more sinning, I'm addicted to success, blessed, young and gifted, the bar's been lifting, started from the bottom, I'm now on top of the world, look my, I made it, new most hated, underestimated, since I haven't been painting, our stories aren't related, so they don't believe. But who cares? I'ma run a few years before I fade to black. My impact shift back to order to lyrical manslaughter in the first degree. I am heat. Young, young, fresh. Don't say that y'all ready, y'all rest. Popping bottles, blowing clouds of blue. Dream chase, all my life is you. Success. Young, young, fresh. Don't say that y'all ready, y'all rest. Popping bottles, blowing clouds of blue. Dream chase, all my life is you. Watch off money when I make it. Whatever's not given, I'ma take it. Cut these niggas, take it. This business is cutthroat. Box cutter, so I don't.
what the f*** is the ceiling? After my first million, I'm gunning the 100+. Incorporated us, real estate and fashion. My passion, love, and hip-hop brought me a long way from the days I pitch rope. The clean-up man did my clean stuff. Took that dirty money and gave it a clean cut. Ain't an avenue these feet ain't touch. How I rise in the clutch, hit my knee and got right back up. Success, young, young, fresh, fresh. No lights, I illuminate the room. It's up to y'all to consume. I left it in pure form. Standard empire, prepared for King Kong. King Great Alexander, no wait. I'm in another mind state, so it's ace of fate. What you found in the workplace is a diamond covered with shit. Antique closer with guaranteed to get the attention of the masses. Running this back with them, so ahead of my time. Take a look at the future. Put it in pause, I'm still in motion. The hood love it every time I'm boasting. I got a right to. I gave life to father to no sale. I'm a young, dirty bastard. So graphic, I make life.